Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Fantasy Football Index podcast. I'm Mark Nolte, and I'm joined by the publisher and senior writer for Fantasy Football Index, Ian Allen. As a point of reference, we are recording this on Saturday, July the 14th. Ian, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Mark?
Doing great. Now, if we had recorded this 2 days earlier, we'd be talking about a potential Drew Brees holdout. But today, everybody is probably still celebrating the Brees household as well as the entire state of Louisiana. And while Matt Forte has not signed yet, it is now being reported that he's going to be extremely close. Also need to mention that you can contact us via email, ffipodcast@gmail.com. And we really want you to send in your comments and questions for next edition's mailbag. I will point out very quickly that the 2012 edition of Fantasy Football Index is on newsstands now. And, you know, another terrific job, Ian.
Thank you. Yeah, we went a little controversial this year with the tight end on the cover, going with Rob Gronkowski on the cover this year. Although, you know, that was a weird deal. We actually looked at him and decided, well, he's going to be a candidate, before we had figured out where he was going to be on the overall draft board. So we had this picture, and then as it turned out, we're actually not that high on Rob Gronkowski. So we're kind of jinx-proof. Some people complain that we have a cover jinx, but just because we're putting him on there doesn't mean that we necessarily think you take Rob Gronkowski with a top-10 pick.
Of course, the biggest story in the offseason was Peyton Manning signing with the Broncos. And I guess my first question is, how much do you trust Peyton Manning?
I trust him completely. I mean, he'll probably be a top five quarterback only because there are so many great quarterbacks. Do we have him way down at ninth or tenth, depending on your scoring system? But he's right up there with those guys. I'd be very comfortable with Peyton Manning as my starting quarterback. He has the neck issue, but he doesn't take sack. You know, he gets rid of the ball. You know, I posted a chart on our Facebook page earlier today. You know, 7 of the last 9 years, his teams have allowed fewer than 20 sacks. So he's not getting hit back there. He doesn't run, and every year his team has a top three passing attack. So I'm sure he'll put up great numbers, do great things, and those who are fortunate enough to pick him up in the, you know, if you can get him in the fifth, sixth round, something like that, that'd be just a great value.
Do you think he's going to ramp up quickly with a whole new cast around him, especially after a year off?
Well, I think the talent there is probably in some ways better than the Colts have a terrible offensive line, terrible running the ball. The last 3-4 years, they haven't been able to run at all. The Broncos have a pretty good offensive line. So I think he'll be fine there. Demaryius Thomas and Eric Decker, he brought in his own tight end over, Jacob Tammy. So they've got the guys they need. Brandon Stokley has actually played with him, and he may be the slot guy. So I think he's got everything he needs. And then just look at the numbers that they put up in Indianapolis. There was a great passing attack every year. And if you look at his last 2 years there, Colts were first in passing, last in rushing. You know, it's going to be a passing offense. I don't care what they did with Tim Tebow and the, you know, that offense. That's just a completely different system. I don't give that any weight at all. So looking for big numbers from him and from all three of those pass catchers. Jacob Tammy, we have him as the number 7 tight end on our board. He's going to have a big year, and both the wide receivers will probably wind up in the top 20.
Well, and to amplify the points you made about don't worry about what the system was last year, it's one of the things that I have a lot of respect for with John Fox and his offensive coaching staff is they have no problem building their offense around the talent that's available to them as opposed to these rigid coaches that would insist that their system's the only system and try to make the players adapt to that system regardless of their talents.
I think that's a great point, Mark. I completely agree. And, you know, it kind of depends on where you get guys. I mean, I still want to have Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Drew Brees before Manning. But, you know, relative to where they're drafted, I think Manning could be a better value than those guys. If you can get him 2 rounds later than those guys, then, yeah, I'll take Manning over those guys.
How much more likely are you to hedge your bet if you do get Manning? Would you be tempted to take a backup quarterback a little bit earlier than you might normally?
No, you got to have stuff go right for you to win at a fantasy league. You know, there's 12 other guys in the league typically, so I'd probably just operate under the assumption that, yeah, this is going to be the quarterback, he's going to be good. I mean, obviously we're always interested, is there a guy that you feel is a really good quarterback that's just falling too far? And as deep as the draft is in quarterbacks this year, there'll be good deals later. I mean, one of the guys I like a lot is RG3, just because of the math of how much guys get overvalued because of rushing production. And he's going to run a lot. I'm very confident that he's going to run for 600, 700 yards and score 6 touchdowns on his own, and that will make him a top 15 quarterback in most scoring systems, maybe even challenging to get in the top 10. He'll be undervalued in drafts. But, no, I'm not thinking about, oh, I got to take another quarterback because I've got Peyton Manning. I would just assume, yeah, this guy's going to be a great player.
The other major story, of course, has been the same situation. They're going to lose Sean Payton, their head coach, for the entire season. Matter of fact, they're going to have an interim to the interim coach for the first 6 weeks. Drew Brees' contract situation just got settled, where now he's going to be the highest paid player in the NFL. How much do you think all this affects Saints offense, particularly Drew Brees?
Yeah, I'm very nervous about the Saints. They'll be overvalued. One of the things I like to do is just kind of look at the historical record. If you look at the 20 or so teams that have scored 30 points a game in a 16-game season, only one of those teams ever has scored more points than next year. You know, so kind of that what goes up must come down deal. The Saints scored 34 points a game last year. That's the fourth most ever in a 16-game season. And just about all of them declined by like 5, 8, 11 points a game. But, you know, I'm thinking with everything going wrong there, with all the player suspensions, the coaching staff ripped up, and Sean Payton was a big part of that. They scored 34 points a game last year, probably 28, 29 points a game, and they're going to lose a touchdown a game, and a lot of their guys are going to be overvalued. I'm not going to my draft thinking I have to get Saints players.
Let's do some quick hitters on some of the other offseason moves. Vincent Jackson to Tampa.
Well, they're going to use him differently. He was also a downfield guy in San Diego. All they'd use him, you know, that's the Norv Turner offense, where all those guys do is the vertical along the sideline type of routes. You know, he was rarely catching more than 60 passes. Now he'll be more of a go-to guy. He's going to catch more passes, but not as many of them will be those deep downfield routes. I think he's a top 25 receiver.
Randy Moss in San Francisco, where, of course, everybody looks great in April, May, and June. Everybody's a star in shorts and T-shirts. But everybody's talking in San Francisco like you're going to see old Randy Moss. Or are you buying that, or are you expecting the Randy Moss we saw 2 years ago that bounced around to three different teams?
He couldn't play 2 years ago. The Titans brought him in, and then he wasn't even good enough to be one of their three receivers. You know, he didn't make any impact with the Vikings. Patriots, you know, they know what good football players are. They didn't want him. So there's that question of can he even play, and then there's also the issue of he's going to San Francisco where they don't really pass the ball very well. Certainly, I can't see him and Alex Smith getting on the same page where he's the guy where they just forced him a bunch of balls in the red zone. So I have no interest in Randy Moss. I'm confident he'll be drafted by somebody else in every league that I'm in long before I would even be considering him.
Brandon Marshall goes to the Bears.
Marshall and Cutler, and you talk about that reunion deal going, but if you go back and look at how they played when they were in Denver, they weren't good in the red zone. I think that Cutler threw 43 touchdowns in the 31 games they were playing. Marshall was suspended for one of those games. I think Marshall caught 13 of them. So I don't think he's going to be one of those guys who catches half of the team's touchdowns. They've got some other guys that catch the ball. They're going to run it a lot. So I think he'll be kind of okay. He's another guy where I think he'll be drafted long before I'd be thinking about him. He's kind of okay, but not quite as good as what other people are saying.
I'm intrigued by the Brandon Lloyd move to New England, because not only does he have Tom Brady throwing to him, but he's also reunited with Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator now in New England. And McDaniels is one that resurrected his career in Denver 2 years ago.
Yeah, how many good receivers can we have is the problem that I have there. Certainly Wes Welker's going to be in the slot. His numbers are going to come down. I see him catching maybe 90 balls, and he's not doing much downfield. And then they've got Gronkowski. They got Hernandez is going to catch a lot of balls. You know, Hernandez was actually the intended target on twice as many passes as Gronkowski when the team was inside the 10 last year. You know, he's a legit player. So with all those other guys in there, I just don't see how Lloyd is going to be used enough where he's going to be that big impact guy. When he had the big year in Denver, he was the only guy they had, and everything kind of went through him, and that's how he led the league with a 1,400-plus receiving yards. He is a surprising guy. He's not that fast, but he did go 18-8, averaging almost 19 yards a catch with Denver, but he had 153 targets that year, and I just can't see him getting used that extensively with the Patriots.
We are required by law to mention Tim Tebow. But it should be pointed out that last year, even though Tim Tebow was not a great quarterback, except for the end of the games from a statistic standpoint as a passer, he was a very effective fantasy quarterback at times.
Yeah, that's what I was starting to get at with RG3. Same sort of guy, not a great passer. I think RG3 will be a better passer than Tebow was last year just as a rookie. And then I'm not saying RG3 is going to be a great passer. Maybe he can get out of the bottom 10 in passing. He did put up huge numbers at Baylor. But that running production, in a typical fantasy scoring system, Tim Tebow, according to my numbers, was a top 12 quarterback. You know, rushing production tends to be doubled in a lot of these leagues. For the Jets, I think he kind of eliminates everybody. I would be concerned that they're going to use him around the goal line. And if Sanchez is coming out consistently around the goal line, then he has no value. He was struggling anyway. He can't afford to lose those touches. And then there's always going to be that threat where they pull him for a series or two. I guess the guy who would be interesting is if Sanchez either gets hurt or if they just pull him and replace him with Tebow, then Tebow becomes one of those guys where, yeah, he isn't a good passer, but with that rushing production where he's running for 40, 50 yards a game and he's scoring half of the rushing touchdowns, then he becomes a fantasy factor.
Were there any other moves under the radar that you really like? For instance, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis goes to Cincinnati. On the other side, maybe Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis leaving the New England backfield frees up a running back for New England you really like. We hit the top free agent moves, the obvious ones. Was there anything kind of under the radar?
You mentioned Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. I'm not a big fan of his. I mean, he wasn't effective in New England. If you can't run in that offense, then what's going to happen when he's in Cincinnati? He scored a lot of touchdowns with the Patriots, but that team, you know, just is around the goal line a lot. I mean, they scored more rushing touchdowns than anybody over the last 3 years. So he's not going to score as many touchdowns with the Bengals. I'm very intrigued by whoever takes his place. I believe it will be Stephen Ridley. Ridley was outperforming Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis at the end of last year. Had a little bit of a fumbling issue, fumbled in their last game, and then he fumbled in one of the playoff games, and they sat him down. I'm very interested in taking him with the idea he'll be just a faster, and he is bigger than Green Ellis as well. So I'm very interested in him. Now, if you take him, you're kind of saying, well, I got to get some other insurance policies, and you're also going to be taking Shane Vereen just in case you're wrong there, and maybe even a late rounder on a Joseph Addai type guy just in case he surprises everybody. We know Belichick likes veterans.
Earlier this week, Josh Gordon went in the supplemental draft, second round to the Cleveland Browns. Sometimes because a guy goes in the supplemental draft and he kind of gets that spotlight all to himself, especially when there's not a lot of other offseason news, he can be a little bit overhyped. Your thoughts on Josh Gordon?
Well, I think the Browns are now the answer to a nice trivia question. I think they're the first team that 2 years in a row has drafted a wide receiver in the second round who didn't play his final year of college ball. You know, Greg Little, you recall, was
right.
Suspended. Now, Little turned out okay. He didn't start for the first month, and then they put him in there, and he was kind of serviceable. He'll be their number one receiver this year. I think they may get the same sort of deal out of Josh Gordon. He didn't play at all last year, so I would be surprised if he's ready to start immediately. But, you know, they wouldn't have taken him in the second round if they didn't think he was better than Muhammad Massaquoi. So I think it'll probably be in October he'll move into the starting lineup. And he is a big, fast guy, has some talent, and maybe a year down the road he'll be a factor for him.
Oh, he is a freaky athlete. I'm a Texas fan, so I've watched a lot of Big 12 football over the last few years. He is a freaky athlete.
We certainly know Browns like taking wide receivers in the second round. Since they got back in the league in 1999, they've selected 8 wide receivers in the second round. That's 3 more than any other team. And only one of them's ever had a 1,000-yard season, Kevin Johnson. They've taken a lot of them. They haven't had a lot of success with them.
One of the hardest things I think it is to do is to look at a player that played in college, look at his numbers in college, and try to decide how that system and the talent around him in the NCAA is going to translate when he makes the move to the NFL. We talked about Robert Griffin III earlier, how much you like him. What are you looking for when you evaluate a college player or an NFL rookie?
Well, I think we all agree that it's really hard to tell which passers are going to be more successful in the pro level, because we see these guys and they're great, Joey Harrington, Akili Smith, Ryan Leaf. We see all these guys that are great passers in college, and then they fizzle out in the pros. And who could have seen that coming with a lot of these guys? However, one thing that, if you just get out the numbers for the last 20 years, if a guy can run in college, if a quarterback is an effective runner in college, almost always the guy is also an effective runner in the pros. So that's why I'm interested in RG3. We know he can run. He's going to be successful as a runner. That's why we can say we're confident. I mean, just look at, run down the list of all the guys who have been first-round picks over the last 20 years. I don't have the thing in front of me, but, you know, Dante Culpepper, Cam Newton, Donovan McNabb. There's only one who was a good runner in college who was not also a great runner in the pros. That'd be Alex Smith. I don't know how he ran for 10 or 12 touchdowns his last year at Utah, but all the other guys who were good runners in college, also good runners in the pros. If you work off the assumption that Griffin is going to run for 500, 600, 700 yards and a half dozen touchdowns, then I think he starts to get real interesting, especially when you look. Mike Shanahan has been very successful passing the ball with lesser quarterbacks, has a passer-friendly system. That's been a top 10 passing team over the last 2 years, and that's been with guys like Rex Grossman back there.
You know, the funny thing about Alex Smith, you just mentioned that he was a really good running quarterback in college, but it hasn't translated to the NFL. That was until the playoff game against New Orleans last year.
That was a nice touchdown, wasn't it?
Yeah, the 25-yard bootleg that, it just came out of nowhere, it seemed like. Maybe the most exciting play in the most exciting game in the playoffs last year. Every week, we are going to take a look at a different position. Right now, we're going to take a look at the tight ends. You touched on it earlier. You have Rob Gronkowski on the cover, and even though you put him on the cover based on the fact that he had 17 receiving touchdowns last year, 18 total, you're seeing some draft lists and some experts saying he's worth a first-round draft pick. He's worth, he should go in the top 10, top 12. You're not nearly that high on Gronkowski.
I don't understand what's going on exactly with the tight ends. Everybody's using them a lot more than they used to. I think it's because teams don't use fullbacks anymore. Fullbacks used to catch 40, 50 passes. Every team had guys like Tom Rathman and John L. Williams and whatnot, and now teams don't have fullbacks anymore. Whatever the reason, if you just get out the numbers for the last 20, 30 years, every year tight ends catch more passes and more touchdowns. And last year and the year before that have been the biggest years ever for tight end. We had these two record-setting guys, Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham, and those guys are great, and I'd love to have either one of them on my team. However, while the ceiling has raised for tight ends, the floor is a lot higher, too. There's going to be all kinds of great tight ends that you're going to be able to get in the 10th, 11th round. We talked to Jacob Tammy is a guy who's going to be a super-duper tight end. I don't know, it's a league-by-league type thing, but you may get him in the 12th round or something like that. Gresham in Cincinnati is nice, Pettigrew, Keller, Vernon Davis, Gates, Finley. There's just so many of them that you're going to get a good one. If you take Gronkowski early, then you're out of the market to be the guy who really hits it big with Tammy later. I think when you adjust for what you're going to get later, then I don't really want to take Gronkowski or Jimmy Graham in the second round. Great players, but you got to get them where the value is right.
Well, and you talk about value because going with everything that you just said, you're trying to get the guy that is more valuable than the guy that you would get two or three rounds later. So with that being said, let's say everybody listens to this podcast, everybody reads a Fantasy Football Index, everybody in your league takes your advice, and Gronkowski falls. Nobody wants to be the first one to take Gronkowski. Where does a Gronkowski or a Jimmy Graham have to fall to you where you go, that's it, this is too valuable of a guy to let go past here?
When I do the numbers and kind of set the baselines at each position and a standard type scoring, I've got Gronkowski as the 21st player. So that would be like a late second round pick in a typical type league, typical 12-team league, 21st player.
I know you're almost as high on Jimmy Graham as you are Gronkowski.
Yeah, he'd be coming in just behind him. Those guys are, you know, can you say with confidence one guy's better than the other guy? There's kind of pluses and minuses for each one of those guys. So, you know, yeah, I'm thinking late second, early third round would be where I'd be looking for those guys. If nobody else wants them, you got to eventually take them, right, and adjust what you were thinking going into a draft. I think you go a little higher than that, though.
What do you do with what I'm going to call the unsustainable number, where you've got 17 receiving touchdowns by a tight end? You know that there's almost no chance that that can be repeated. What do you do with a number like that? How do you use that number to project into what you expect him to do in 2012?
I don't project individual numbers for guys. I project team numbers, and then for each team, I've got a percentage for how it's going to break down. For you were talking about Gronkowski, and let me just give you the exact numbers here. So, you know, I'm going to forecast. I do like the team and the offense. I've got them coming up to close to 40 touchdown passes. I've got them at 2.4 touchdown passes per game. So whatever 2.42 times 16 is, that's what I've got them at. And then you've got to assign percentage numbers to all these different receivers that they have to add up to 100. So, you know, you can't just say that Gronkowski, if you say that he's going to catch half of them, then all the other pass catchers are going to be really low on your board. I think they'll spread it around. I've got him at 21% of their touchdown catches. So that'd be a fifth of a fifth of 40. I guess that's about eight touchdowns. Yeah, try not to get too trapped into that big 18 number from last year. I don't try and work off, well, he had 18 last year. He's not going to be that good. I'll put him at 15.
Yeah.
I don't work off that system where I'm doing an individual deal. All the pieces have to fit together. And on that team, there's a lot of guys. I mean, when you factor in that the running backs are going to catch a couple, so they've got to account for 8% or 9% of that total. And Hernandez, we talked about that earlier, twice as many look inside the 10 as Gronkowski last year. Wasn't nearly as effective, but he saw twice as many throws as Gronkowski. So how confident are we that Gronkowski's going to outscore Hernandez? They've got a blocking tight end, Daniel Fells. I put him down for 1%. He might catch a touchdown. Then you got Welker, Lloyd, and there'll be a third receiver there. I'm not sure if it's going to be Jabbar Gaffney or Deion Branch, or one of those guys will probably get cut. So as you're kind of pushing it around with the Patriots, I've got, you know, kind of four guys around that 20% mark: Gronkowski, Hernandez, Welker, and Lloyd. And Lloyd's going a little lower than that. Gronkowski's going a little higher, and I've got Hernandez and Welker right at 20%. So that's going to be working out to a bunch of guys at 7 to 9 touchdowns.
Right, because even if you don't think Brandon Lloyd is going to do what he did in Denver in 2010, you certainly expect him to be more effective than what Chad Ochocinco was last season.
Oh yeah, he's a good downfield receiver. He's shown that. He was about the best receiver in the league 2 years ago, and then he was very effective in St. Louis last year. I think he caught, like, after he joined the team, he caught over half of their touchdown passes. He does have talent. He can catch the ball while he's covered. He's one of those kind of things where somebody's on him and he can still come up with it. Belichick's a matchup guy. If everybody's crowding Gronkowski and he's kind of seen as that number one guy, he's not going to force balls to him, and he'll use other guys and they'll spread it around. That's kind of how Tom Brady and Belichick do it, I think.
Let's take a look at the top tight ends that you've got ranked in the 2012 edition of Fantasy Football Index. One of the things I'd like you to do is maybe give me a quick hit, and most importantly, kind of tell me where you think there's a big drop-off to the next level is. We've already talked about Rob Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham.
Then, yeah, well, that'll be our first drop-off right after those guys.
Right.
Down to who do you go with the number three guy? And I think that there's a debate there. When I do the numbers, I've got Aaron Hernandez and Jason Witten is almost interchangeable at that third spot, but quite a drop-off down to those guys.
So if you're looking at Rob Gronkowski and Jimmy Graham, in your world, you think they're guys that you would look at bottom of the second, early the third in a 12-team league. So Witten and Hernandez, what are you thinking, maybe fourth and fifth round guys?
It's kind of tough. I don't really want to take those guys because, you know, I love Jacob Tammy. He's going to be that guy that I want to get a lot later. I haven't had a chance. I haven't had the numbers. I've got him as the number seven tight end on my board. Now, we did a thing where we pulled, I think, about 90 different readers, and I haven't looked through where they have him, but I think he's going to be outside the top 10 on a lot of boards. He's going to be a value type guy that I'm going to want in a lot of my drafts because he's going to be in that next group after it. So I'm not eager to take Hernandez and Witten, that number third guy. They're kind of in that same deal where eventually you kind of have to take them.
So you've got Witten, Hernandez, then it goes five Jermichael Finley, six Antonio Gates, seven Jacob Tammy.
And now, Tammy, in my opinion, he's right there with Finley and Gates. I mean, that's kind of the caliber of guy we're talking about. He played 10 games with Manny 2 years ago. Remember, Clark got hurt,
right,
and he started 10 games, and he caught 60 passes in 10 games, six catches a game, and 6 times 16 is 96 passes. Not saying he's catching 96, but I'm just saying, yeah, this guy is. He doesn't block at all. They're not putting him out there to block. He's going to be that Dallas Clark type guy who very likely will catch 80 balls and you know, maybe 6-7 touchdowns, something like that. He's a starting tight end. I don't care that he hasn't done it before or that he's, you know, not a name guy and he's not as talented as some of these other guys. He is a fantasy starting tight end for us, and certainly a guy that doesn't want to fall too far in a draft.
The guys that you've got listed after him will probably go before Tammy. You've got to figure Vernon Davis will go before Jacob Tanney, probably Tony Gonzalez. Everybody keeps waiting for Tony Gonzalez to fall off, but he's been very productive the last couple of years and still a big name.
I'll tell you why I'm going Tammy ahead of those guys. Vernon Davis is obviously way more talented than Tammy, but the offense there, they can't pass the ball effectively. They're better wide receiver now. They've added Manningham and they've added Moss. Can they get over that hump of throwing about 20 touchdowns? I just don't see that happening. I don't see that being a big passing offense. So it's not that Tammy's better than Vernon Davis. He's just in a much better offense. And then Gonzalez, I'm worried about Julio Jones. I think that he's one of the breakout wide receivers. He's going to have a much bigger role, and Gonzalez is getting pretty darn old. So I'm thinking they've got him at the bottom of the top 10 as the number 9 guy on our board.
Do you see Jermaine Grisham being closer to that level with the Tony Gonzalez's and Vernon Davis's, or do you see him closer to the guys underneath him, Brandon Pettigrew, Dustin Keller, Brett Celek?
I've got him as the last guy of we can put Gates, and Gates is better, but he's a huge injury. I'm talking about when the injuries are factored in. I see Gates, Tammy, Davis, Gonzalez, and Gresham is really pretty similar. I've got, in terms of fantasy points, only 8 points of difference between those five guys. You know, you set your board, and then once the draft starts, it's going to be the other guys in the league that determine who you take. I'm expecting that they're going to dictate that I take Jacob Tammy, but somebody else likes Tammy, then it'll be one of those other guys.
And then after that, it goes to Brandon Pettigrew, Dustin Keller, Brent Celek, Fred Davis, Owen Daniels, Greg Olson, Kobe Fleener, Heath Miller, Jared Cook, and Dwayne Allen.
Now we're getting into the guys, we don't really want those guys. But in a perfect world, maybe I get a tight end and Tammy is my second tight end. We just, you know, don't have any of those guys. I can't get excited about Dustin Keller. He's a great player, great talent, but like Vernon Davis, he's just on the wrong team. Tim Tebow, Sanchez really struggled last year. He's a great talent, great player, but he's on the wrong team. Brent Celek, he's had a couple of nice spells where it's like, oh, this guy's going to be a great tight end, but then they just can't seem to keep it going. And they got a lot of different guys there, great wide receivers, and they're running the ball really well last year with McCoy. So I just didn't have room to get him higher. Fred Davis, very good last year, he's a drug test issue where he flunks a drug test. He's out for the year. Did bring in some new wide receivers. I don't think he's going to be used quite as extensively. Rookie quarterback, so tough to get excited about him.
Let's say you get Jacob Tammy or one of the other tight ends in the top 10, one of the guys that you like. You've got good value there. Of the guys that we've listed 11 through 20, who would you like for your backup that you think might have some upside?
Well, I think most people would probably answer that with a Jared Cook. Every year it seems like he finishes the year with some phenomenal thing. I think the last couple of games he caught 17 passes. They threw him 19 balls and he caught 17. It looks like he's going to be the next Shannon Sharp or something.
Had a huge long touchdown in Week 16 championship week. I know this because I had him on my bench.
He had an 80-yarder, I think, earlier in the year against Cleveland.
Yeah.
So the guy has some talent. Well, while he plays like Shannon Sharp as a wide receiver, he also plays like Shannon Sharp as a blocker. And that's kind of hurt his ability to get on the field. He just didn't play that much last year. I have a hard time saying that he's going to be the breakout tight end because they may have Jake Locker quarterbacking most of the year. I'm confident working under the assumption he will quarterback most of the games, and he's just not a great passer. We had him up at Washington, and he's a rookie, first-year kind of guy, and they were a top 12 passing team last year. They're not going to be a top 12 passing team with Jake Locker. And then they have a lot of wide receivers there. Kenny Britt can be healthy, and Nate Washington is functional. Damian Williams is functional, and they could have the hot rookie receiver, Kendall Wright. Kind of like all those receivers are there. It's the blocking issue. You get a lot of guys. How good is the team going to pass the ball? So I'm not a big Jared Cook fan. I guess I would look at, you know, maybe Heath Miller. I'm not crazy about him. I guess you could take Owen Daniels and hope that he stays healthy. He's had some injury issues and kind of tailed off a little bit. Maybe he will benefit from Joel Dreesen being gone to Denver.
we're going to go ahead and go to our mailbag. Now, this edition of the mailbag, since it's our first podcast, we have pulled some questions from the online edition of Ian's mailbag at fantasyindex.com and from the 2012 edition of Fantasy Football Index magazine. We will go with podcast exclusive questions. We do invite your questions to ffipodcast@gmail.com. We're going to try as much as possible to go with questions that are interesting to everybody or have value to everybody, which means we're going to try to get away from who should I start between player X and player Y, who should I keep between these three players. We're going to try to keep the questions more general. We're going to make them more useful to everybody. And with that thought in mind, here's a question from Dave Smith in Walls, Mississippi. I noticed that you have Kenny Britt ranked lower than I would have thought. Do you think he won't be recovered from his injury?
Oh, well, that's similar to the Jared Cook deal. They've got a lot of different guys there. Now, he is coming off the major knee injury. But Kenny Britt has been the best wide receiver in the entire league over the last 2 years. If you just look at per-game production, he scored 12 touchdowns in the 11 games he started. So he's like Terrell Owens, but got a lot of wide receivers there, and Jake Locker could be starting at quarterback. Hey, I love Jake Locker. I attended the University of Washington, but we do separate business from pleasure, and we're just trying to win some fantasy games, and I don't see him putting up big passing numbers.
From Gary Metz in Highlands Ranch, Colorado, a math question. Looking for some of your thoughts, comments on injury-prone players like Vic McFadden. I feel like you may be slightly undervaluing them. It appears your rankings are basically solely on the projected total number of points for a player. However, isn't the goal to have as many points as possible for each starting position? Thus, you could argue that when these players are hurt, you will have a backup filling their roles, and that some value must be given to the points these backups will acquire while your star is hurt.
Yeah, well, he's right. There's a whole bunch of numbers here behind the curtain that these guys don't see, and we try and not intimidate people by throwing too much. I've got a spreadsheet in front of me that, well, let me just count it up here. I will click off and see. You know, it's one of those Excel jobs. Well, it's over 100 columns wide. It's thousands of numbers here. So we're balancing what a guy does as a starter, but then there's some backdoor kind of stuff we can do because we do have interest in guys such as Ben Tate. He's going to be great if he gets in the lineup. Certainly we want those kind of guys. Isaiah Pede of the Rams is another guy where, hey, maybe this guy isn't going to play much, but when Steven Jackson gets hurt, we're certainly going to want him. We want to put those guys ahead of some sort of like fullback type guy like Marcel Reese, who's going to give you, or, you know, or Danny Woodhead, somebody like that is going to give you a few points each week. Things are happening behind the curtain to make sure that those guys are high enough at where we want them. So it's kind of number-based, and guys get put in order, but I have some numbers that you don't see to make sure that the numbers come out right for your fantasy draft. That's the short answer.
Yes, your forecasts and your projections are based on math, but at the same time, you're also factoring other things in there as well. You're not one of these guys that's going, oh, I ran the spreadsheet, and the spreadsheet never lies. This is the rankings. You are applying some subjective standards to your rankings as well.
Well, what I'm doing is I do a projection for each team. We talked about that earlier with Gronkowski and percentages and doing team projections and stuff. So I do some numbers and get the guys all in an order. But then at least once a week, I just go down the list and say, well, gosh, do we really want Peyton Hillis to be below James Starks, or do we want him higher? Or we see Evan Royster's coming in ahead of Michael Bush, and do we want to adjust that? And what I do to adjust some of those guys is I will change the number of games. So like on the finished product, it may say that a guy's going to play 13 games. If I want him to go a little higher, I'll just change that 13 to 13.3 games, stuff like this. So it's decimals that you're not seeing. So I do dink around with the guys a little bit when I look at the number, and I just kind of like, you know, I don't care what the number says. I want Jamal Charles to be ahead of Isaac Redmond or whatever. So I am playing around with the numbers a little bit just so that the list comes out the way I want it to.
From David Hanley of West Hartford, Connecticut, what are your thoughts on the value of Ben Tate? To me, he is the 2012 version of Larry Johnson from the days when Larry backed up Priest Holmes and KC, one injury away from being the top back in the league.
Well, I disagree with that. You know, the difference was Priest Holmes was an older guy, smaller guy who was breaking down. He'd had the two big seasons, and Larry Johnson had already proven that he was better than Priest Holmes. Now, though, in this case, we got Arian Foster still in his prime and playing great, and I don't think he's an injury problem guy. He had a hamstring issue last year, and he was able to fight through. They did aggravate it a couple of times, but he's healthy now. I guess the only reason I would, you know, any time a running back plays a lot, they can get hurt, and that's a concern. I guess the only slight concern, which I'm not experienced in, but he did go vegan. I guess he's going vegetarian. I guess not a true vegan, but he's going vegetarian. If you don't believe in vegetarians, then maybe you stay away from Arian Foster. I think he's going to be fine, and that he's the clear number one running back on the board, and a guy I'd be very interested in having to lead my team.
From Peter Chen in Stanford, California, when was the last time an elite running back successfully returned from an ACL injury?
Well, it doesn't happen a lot. Now, the guys he's talking about here are Adrian Peterson and Rashard Mendenhall, and we have Jamal Charles kind of coming in. Now, the thing that Jamal Charles has on those guys is his injury was a lot earlier than theirs. He got hurt the second game of the season. Those guys were both late season injuries, so he's way ahead of those guys. So I think with him, you're kind of looking over. Now, let me call up a chart here. I actually have a chart where, you know, anytime a guy gets hurt with a knee thing, we throw it in here. I've got Jamal Lewis. He had a knee injury, came back the next year and ran for 1,300 yards and 7 touchdowns, so he was able to do it. The other guys who have gone 1,000 yards the year after, this is not just any year after, this is the year after they had the knee surgery. I've got 4 other guys who went over 1,000 yards the year after a knee surgery. Kurt Warner, Deuce McAllister, Terry Allen, Jamal Anderson. There's 4 guys who are 1,000-yard rushers. Just because they're 1,000-yard rushers, is that really great? They weren't 1,300-yard guys. They just barely got over 1,000. So none of those guys were knock-it-out-of-the-park type guys. And then the list is much longer of guys who did not go over 1,000. Talk about Edgerrin James, Ronnie Brown. They were both in the 900-yard range. Deuce McAllister became a 400-yard back. He got passed by Pierre Thomas. Terrell Davis was never the same. Icky the Woods, never the same. Cadillac Williams, never the same. Atlantis Gary. So I think the rule of thumb is you probably don't want to take these guys coming off these late season knee injury things. So Adrian Peterson, Rashard Mendenhall, not guys I would take. I do like the idea of a gamble on Jamal Charles.
Where would you gamble on Charles in a 12-team league?
I think he can be I've got him as like the 15th to 20th best running back on the board. It's always tough where you take those running backs. I tend to find that most people overvalue running backs, so it's going to be tough to figure out where you're going to fit those guys in. I think he can be a top 20 running back. Let's call it that, as opposed to trying to pick what round he would go in.
Fair enough. Well, that's going to wrap up this edition of the Fantasy Football Index podcast. Not put together an official schedule yet, but hopefully we'll have to do so in the near future. And again, we invite your comments, we invite your feedback, but let us know what kind of information you're looking for and what you want to hear. And again, we welcome your questions as well to ffipodcast@gmail.com. You can find the 2012 Fantasy Football Index on newsstands now, and it's also available to order by mail at the fantasyindex.com website. And while you're there, check out a variety of really good fantasy football material and information. For Ian Allen of Fantasy Football Index, I'm Mark Nolte. Thanks again for downloading and listening. Goodbye, everybody.